Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry M. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, August 23rd, and today we are reading from the Big Book, page 23, the third paragraph. Today's readers are Dana P., Justin B., and Jody E. The reference number for August 22nd, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Meeting is 19,318. And the share ID for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Meeting, is 19,321. The OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine, and we take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Rhonda R. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. Thank you, Sherry, for your service. This is Rhonda R., a recovered compulsive eater in Georgia. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for the opportunity to do service today. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Rhonda. Nancy R. is up next to read the 12 traditions. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you so much, Sherry, and good morning, everyone. This is Nancy R. in New York. I am a compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you so much for allowing me to do this terrific service. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Nancy. Oh, thanks, Nancy. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 23, the third paragraph. And I will now ask Dana P. to unpack this paragraph for us. Thanks, Dana.
Good morning, Sherry. It's my pleasure. I'm Dana P. I'm in California, recovered from compulsive overeating and vomit bulimia. How true this is, few realize. In a vague way, their families and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal, but everybody hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will arouse himself from his lethargy and assert his power of will. Wow, that is something. There's few little sentences right there. And looking at this part where it says how true this is, well, how true what is? So I kind of have to go back to the paragraph before. And what pops out to me in the biggest way is this part where it says, once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. So, you know, in the beginning, I go back to when I was 17 and I started this diet when I wasn't even overweight. I wanted to lose that 5 pounds that I put on from binge drinking. And I was going away to school, and, you know, it was about control for me, and I was able to really ratchet down and lose the weight. Not only did I lose that 5 pounds, but I lost another extra 25. So I was down into an anorexia range, which was, I don't know how frightening for my family or whether they were or not, but I recall later on having this discussion with my mother about it. And, you know, I was really in a lot of resentment and anger and blaming her for, you know, why did you let this go on? Because after that, you know, I got to the place where I had no control over compulsively eating. But I had this brilliant plan, you know, that I would not get fat because I would just throw up everything I ate, which I did. And it worked for a while until I couldn't control that anymore. And it was necessary for me to deal with my sense of lack of control. So it was really this baffling experience that I was having. And so I was asking my mother, I said, you know, so why didn't you do something? Why didn't you put me away or, you know, take me to therapy or whatever? And she said, you know, honestly, I thought that you'd go away to college and you would put on that freshman 30 or whatever the whole thing is. And so, you know, my mom, she wasn't really in denial. She just didn't know what to do, and she thought that things would get better. And I realized over time and as I worked this program, and especially when I did my first four step, how selfish I was, you know, how selfish I was, because over the years, how much my family suffered, and realized that, wow, there's something not right, but they didn't know what to do. And they hopefully were awaiting all the while I was blaming them for why I was the way I was. And the word lethargy, it means essentially lazy or slothful. And for me, that left the word sluggishness and inertia. But boy, I'll tell you, I had a lot of inertia with activity, exercising compulsively, working compulsively, multiple compulsions. And so when I look at that word lethargy, it says to me delusion, you know, rouse myself from this delusion that I didn't see what was going on. And the power of will, boy, I had a power of will, but not over this. So that I believe my time is up. I could go on with this paragraph, but I'm so excited to hear what other people have to say. And I'm going to pass.
Thanks so much, Dana, for getting us started. And I appreciate that. Okay, so although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you've shared on Monday or Friday, we ask that you, hold on. Okay, and I'm going to be saying time because I don't have my separate timer today, so hopefully that's okay. And I will take names now, so if you can give me your name one at a time. Thank you, and I'll repeat it as I hear them.
Laura W.
Laura W.
Jane from Massachusetts.
Jane from Massachusetts. Virginia, New York. Good morning, Virginia.
Morning.
Anybody else want to get in this lineup? We have three so far.
Deb E.
Okay. Oh, Debbie. Thanks, Deb. Okay.
Jody E.
Let's get started. Jody E. There's our five. Okay. So we'll start with this lineup. Laura W. is up first, and everyone please tell us where you're from as well. Thanks, Laura.
Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W. Can you hear me okay? Okay, I'm just going to go.
Perfectly.
I'm a recovered, thanks. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. I listen to this meeting or the 7 a.m. every day, and I don't share as much as I'd like to, because I really find that this meeting, I'm a student. You know, I'm a student at this meeting, despite the fact that I've been in this program for many years. And with God's grace, next Friday I'll have 18 years of back-to-back abstinence and recovery, not restricting, not binging, not purging. And there's no other evidence of God than the fact that this time has gone by and I'm still working this program. This paragraph, you know, in a vague way, their family and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal, but everyone hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will rouse himself. My daughter is heavily in this addiction. She is, she's anorexic. She's gone through hospitalization. She's gone through a treatment center. She came out and we had such hope for her. And, and she's back in it after 4 months of being home. She's back in it and she's restricting and she's over exercising, and there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. I am so powerless. Actually, there is something I can do about it. I can recover. And that's what I'm doing. She knows what I do. She knows about the 12-step program. We've had conversations about it. I've pretty much 12-stepped her when she's asked me questions. But you know what? This disease, we are spiritually bankrupt in this disease, and we forget what it does to us, and only we remember what it does for us. And she's in that, and you know, it's a reminder to me of what I don't want to do today. Despite wanting to control something, you know, I think to myself, well, I can't control her, I can't control anybody. what can I control? I can control my food. You know, maybe I can drop a few pounds. I can add some more time on my training for my races that I have coming up. You know what? The truth is that, you know, it's not in anybody's control. So it doesn't matter how long I am in recovery. One slip will develop into a relapse because I kick off the phenomenon of craving. So the frothy emotional appeal that this paragraph talks about is really pointless. It's a waste of energy. And I have to have faith in my higher power, in God, that he will not only continue to take care of me, but he will take care of those that I love and to be an example, you know, and to not, you know, to take some action where I can, of course, which I am. But, you know, to admit powerlessness and to let go of that control is a one day at a time process. Denial is what keeps us in our disease. And the truth and honesty is what keeps us in recovery. So I'm grateful for honesty today. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks, Laura. Jane is up next, followed by Virginia. Go ahead, Jane. Star one, Jane, to unmute.
Hi, I'm Jane from Massachusetts. And I was just interested listening to the reading about how many people restrict and overexercise and throw up their food and stuff. And I never did any of those things. I was never a big exerciser. I would take walks and stuff, but I never overexercised. And I didn't vomit my food. And I also was not a restrictor. But I did do things with the food, you know, like I would I remember owning a pair of stretchy pants, and I'd call them my fat pants because whenever I'd get to a certain weight, they would be the only pants that would fit me comfortably. And I could never buy regular jeans because as soon as I started putting on weight, it would show in the front, and then I had trouble getting them over my stomach because I'd gain a lot of weight in the stomach. And I know that I know it took me years to figure out that I was sugar addicted, and I would eat a lot of sweets, and then I would go into kind of a funk, and then I would put on weight, and then I would, when it was time to like go to a special occasion or whatever, I would take off 5 pounds or whatever and say, oh good, I took this off, maybe I can take off more weight. But I really wanted to control, but like I said, it took me a long time to figure out that I was being I was being triggered by the foods that I was eating. And even long after I was in OA, I just recently, after Christmas of this year, I got a new sponsor, and she's very strict. And I realized what I was doing with food, and I said, you know, I really need to get smart with what I'm eating, and I really need to eat for health reasons and not because I want to have a lot of junk to eat. So, like I said, I never went to extremes with this disease, but I did play games with the food, and I did try to lose the weight and diet and all that other stuff, but I never took off like 30 or 40 pounds or whatever, except when I was, there was one point in the program where I was exercising on an exercise bike and I was eating healthy, and I did take off 40 pounds, but that was over a long period of time, so I did it in a healthy way. But now that I'm back on track in OA, I feel like a new person, and I feel like even though it's a baffling, cunning disease and I have to be careful like everyone else and just one slip can put me into relapse, it's the only way to go, the only program that I have, the only thing that works, and without my higher power and all of you, I wouldn't be able to do it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And next up is Virginia, followed by Deb.
Hi, this is Virginia from New York. I wanted to say that to kind of claim my seat and share so that this is the first time I'm sharing on this meeting, and to say that I am back from a relapse. I don't want to call it a slip, a relapse. I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic, and my compulsion was alive and well 2 nights ago, and I realized that when I read this paragraph, people, and I think that it's my will that I can control this. And what I saw the other night was that a reminder that I have no control. I am completely powerless. I'm trying to see my relapse as a gift, because it scared me back into the realization that I am powerless. And I read this morning that from one of the readings that if we truly take the third step, we cannot fail to recover. And that is what I am doing by coming back to meetings, working this program. This is the only way I can turn my will over to God, because I am truly powerless. So thank you for letting me share my path.
Thanks so much, Virginia. Deb E. is up next, followed by Jody E. Go ahead, Deb.
Thanks. Hi, this is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And this part of the sentence, it says, in a vague way, their families and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal. Just makes me think of the first few dates with my my husband, how, you know, the first date we had, we went out for ice cream, and I was just, like, completely lost to the world while I was eating this ice cream. And, you know, and talking about it afterwards, fitting the pieces back together, because it took me 6 years from that point to find OA. And he was like, yeah, that did seem a little bit strange. You know, it was only after the fact. But the story that sticks out the most in my mind was, I forget how much, I think it was only a few weeks later, we were sharing a slice of pie. And in my mind, it was very calculated, because I was always, you know, calculating every calorie I ate. And it was, you know, I take a bite, you take a bite, I take a bite, you take a bite. And he didn't follow my plan. And he somehow couldn't read my mind, surprise. And so he ate the last bite, and I gave him like a death stare. And to this day, that was 28 years ago, to this day, he will never finish. If we're sharing something, he will never finish it. But the miracle of this program is that I can share my food today. I can eat, you know, with other people. I'm not paranoid about every single morsel like I used to be. And I can give food away. You know, I could never do that before. I didn't want to share anything. I was completely obsessed. And yeah, so there's always like some kind of sign, I feel like, but it was easily, for me, it was easily disguised in, oh, but she's just a healthy eater, and she's like, she's all into fitness, and she keeps in good health, so that's why she eats this way. But the deeper you look, and I did a really good job of concealing it, you know, it was my big secret. I didn't want anyone to know that I was a compulsive overeater, and at that point, I didn't even know to call it that. I just knew I had a problem with food, and I definitely didn't want anybody to know that there was anything wrong with me, you know, the way I looked at it. So today I'm grateful I had that, because it's brought me to a spiritual way of life that I'm not convinced I would have had the motivation to live by had I not had the in motivation that this disease gives me, to, you know, knowing that if I don't work hard at it, I won't get to keep what I have. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Deb. And Jody E's up next, and then I'll be taking a new lineup. Go ahead, Jody.
Thank you so much, Sherry. Good morning, everybody. This is Jody E, gratefully recovered from California. So, yes, in a vague way, their families and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal. Well, I think my friends and family have had that sense, you know, since many years ago when I first started dieting. I like the first speaker, am an anorexic bulimic type. And I think my friends and family wished that I did not have so much power of will. Because I exerted that will and lost a lot of weight. And then those of them who are still close to me to this day, who knew me back then, they probably still think that I'm somewhat abnormal because they see me perhaps weighing and measuring my food, not eating this, not eating the other thing, which they don't necessarily understand. They don't necessarily understand that. So they may think that I'm still abnormal, but hopefully they're seeing something else as well, and I think they are. They're also seeing a change in me spiritually, mentally, emotionally. They sense, and they sometimes tell me, that they sense a calmness, a serenity, a peace that they admire, that they seem to, admire. So that's my hope and prayer, that though they may not understand me and my disease as a compulsive eater, anorexic, bulimic, they will perhaps forget about it for a minute and see something else. See that I am kind, tolerant, patient, and loving. That is my hope and my prayer today, that they see the promises of the program coming true in me. And with that, I pass.
Oh, thanks so much, Jody E. And before I take another lineup, I just want to let everyone know that we are reading today from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 23, the third paragraph. And we read that paragraph only. And before I take a lineup, in case you didn't hear in the beginning, that we do value your experience, strength, and hope. And we also ask that you hold back and wait every third day to share. So if you've shared on any Vision for You meetings, Friday, Tuesday, Friday or Monday, we ask that you hold back. Thanks.
Veronica B.
Josh R.
Beth V. from Pennsylvania.
What was your first name?
Rod G.
Beth,
B-E-T-H.
Okay. Beth.
Oh, Beth. Oh.
Yes, Beth V.
Yep. I have Veronica, Josh, Beth, Roz, and I have Rick. Did I miss anybody?
Josh R.
Janice K.
Yep, I have Josh. And Janice R.
Janice K.
Mm-hmm. Janice K. I have Veronica, Josh, Beth, Roz, Rick, and Janice. I think that's a great lineup. So why don't we get started with Veronica?
Hi, good morning. I'm Veronica, recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic in California. And thank you, Sherry, for your service. So good to be on the line today. I'm going to focus in on the word abnormal. My eating disorder, my compulsive eating is very abnormal to like a normal eater. For example, my sister can have half a piece of cheesecake and she will say, oh, it's too rich for me, and she doesn't finish it, and that makes me insane. I don't relate to people like her, because that's the whole point for me. Like, I eat rich, high-fat, high-calorie foods that just, they numb me out. They take care of my feelings, you know. They make me feel safe and secure. And I live like that for many years. I use food for comfort, for everything. And that's not normal, you know. So I know, like, I am in a different entity. And my eating disorder caused me a lot of suffering and a lot of despair. And that came out in my actions and how I treated my family, how I showed up for them, how I showed up at work. You know, I was very selfish. I was very sensitive. I was quick to get hurt, quick to get offended. And this is how I showed up for my family before Overeaters Anonymous, before I came into this program and worked the 12 steps and learned a different way of living, learned to have God reliance and not self reliance, learned that it's more important for me to to think of you and to help you than to, you know, be obsessing about me and what I'm going to get or not get. And like was shared before, I'm hoping that my family sees my demonstration when I'm with them, what this program has done for me, what the 12 steps have done for me, how I've changed the way I think and the way I show up today. And that's all because I got a God in my understanding that helps me every day to live in today and to show up as the best person I can show up as today, not as the selfish person that I was before a program. And because in my heart, like, I do want to do God's will. Like, I just want peace. And the food kept me in despair and suffering. And so today I have food neutrality. I have a God of my understanding. And my God is my confidence. You know, He is my confidence. And every day I have to do this work to stay connected with God and with you guys. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Veronica. Perfect timing. Josh is up next, followed by Beth. Go ahead, Josh.
Hi, this is Josh R. I'm from Ontario, Canada. Yeah, you know, I had an experience yesterday that just kind of, you know, reminded me of this this passage in the big book. You know, I told my wife I was just going to go get a certain amount of food at a place that I shouldn't be going to. You know, I was going to get some trigger food, but only a certain amount. And, you know, I told her kind of what I was going to get, and that just led to going to, you know, restaurant after store and after store, and just kept going to place after place, and I just had lost total control. And came home and my wife said that, you know, I had lied to her, and I kind of said to my sponsor, you know, did I lie to my wife? Did I have control? Was it me being dishonest, or was it, you know, did I have a lack of control? And I think when I read this, I see that maybe in my wife's mind, she knows something's not right with the food, because no sane person would be eating the amount of food that I'm eating in such a short period of time. But she also must think, or I wonder if she thinks, that at some point I'm going to assert my power of will and not lie once I lose control, you know, stick to what I say I'm going to eat when I decide to get into the food, when I make that choice. I have been really struggling with the food, back into the food, and it's really hard for me. I'm a therapist, and after every session that I do, I just want to go eat. I just want to go fill all that discomfort and all that insecurity and all of that fear of, did I do a good job? Just all the fear that can come from this profession. And I just want to fill that with food. And so it's really hard for me at this point. And I'm just glad I can come to a meeting like this and feel like I can share, even though I am in the food right now. And that's all I wanted to say. So thank you. I'll pass.
Oh, thanks so much, Josh. Beth is up next, followed by Roz.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Beth V from Pennsylvania. Gratefully recovered just for today. And today, when I read this paragraph, I read that first line about how true this is. And I had to look at the paragraph above and remember that what they were talking about is that once this malady had taken hold of a real compulsive overeater, they sensed that they too were down for the count. And they also were baffled, it says, that they could not control this addiction. And so when I read this, I understand that I am abnormal. And I knew that there was something off about me through all the years that I've been in obsessed with food and other substances. And instead of remaining in bafflement, which means to be completely unable to understand. I knew that there was something different, and I made a decision to look at that and to be, you know, smart enough to have enough truth and awareness, honest enough to acknowledge that because I was different, I had to examine these delusions that, you know, I just could not eat sugar and I could not eat certain alcoholic foods that caused me to keep eating them, eating the whole bag. That was not normal. I found a solution in this program, and I was roused from whatever I was in being. I woke up and said, I accept that this is something that I have, that a lot of people in this program, there's only a small percentage of people who wake up and realize they are different. And those people I have found here in OA and in Vision, they're the ones who are here every single day and maybe for all three meetings. And they're the ones that I listen to, and they're the ones that have told me, they've spent time with me talking to me and explaining to me what the steps mean and how to find a higher power and how to practice connecting with my higher power. So breaking my isolation and thinking that I could do this on my own when I had this great wealth of people who have the same disease that I have, addiction, I connected. And that, along with higher power and something greater than myself, whatever it is, to get started and stay put, is where I live today. And for that, I'm so grateful to everybody. And with that, I will pass.
Perfect timing. Thanks so much, Beth. Roz G is up next, followed by Rick.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Roz G, recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. And the word that caught my attention this morning, but first I want to say the shares this morning have been amazing and powerful. Thank you for these shares. And the word that came to my attention this morning was lethargy. Lethargy. And lethargic means that it's a stuporous, cloudy, sleepy feeling. And every day I would eat my lunch, and I'm talking about, like, say, a work situation. I'd eat my lunch, which was an abstinent. You know, it would be a sandwich or a coffee cake or breakfast as well. Coffee cake, sandwich, McDonald's morning with the coffee and all that stuff, McMuffin and all that stuff. And about midday, I'm half asleep. And I'm supposed to be teaching. And you know that feeling when your eyes can barely stay open? I'd be sitting at my desk, staring into my computer screen with my eyes glazed over and wondering, what the heck's going on? So I tell this nutritionist that, you know, I've been in OA for 20 years, so I'm not talking years and years ago. So I went to this nutritionist who was more interested in selling supplements than really giving a food plan. And, I'm not downing her, but that was what she did. And she gave me these pills to take to fight the lethargy during the day. You know what it was, is that I was not abstinent, that I was into the food, and I was making up excuses to eat whatever I wanted to eat. And it would make me lethargic during the day. Sugar, flour, for me, white flour, there are some flours that I can eat, but, you know, the basic sugar and flour, white food products, get into my system and turn into sugar, and my digestive system can't handle it, my brain can't handle it, and I get lethargic, and I can't function very well. And I forget that this happens to me. If I don't, as I've heard with somebody else said, I have a built-in forgetter. If I don't get up in the morning and pray and meditate,
and remember who my higher power is, work with other people, do my 10 steps during the day, do my nightly review at night, write a gratitude list in the morning, I'm going to forget and go right back. I have to remain in fit spiritual condition every single day. And I do enjoy my life. I have a wonderful life, but I don't want to get into that lethargy. That's what the food does to me. At first, it's great, but then, thank you. Seconds later, I'm done. So thank you. I'm recovered today, but I'm grateful for the memories of what happened to me. Thank you. I pass.
Thanks, Charles G. Rick is up next, followed by Janice. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi, my name is Rick. I'm a compulsive overeater out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I have a lot of thoughts to share, but I'm coming off of 8 months of abstinence because I followed the 12 steps. I got a sponsor, and maybe I took a little too much for granted. And unfortunately, my mom's birthday party was Saturday night, and I fell off the rails, had a bad – one of my family relatives really got drunk, loud, and became an extremely negative, embarrassing, humiliating, disrespectful situation, and I just went off the deep end, and I've relapsed after 8 months of abstinence, and so I'm back. You know, I have a sponsor. I called him, talked to him. He says, dude, just get back on track. And the worst part of what we do is it's not the physical death, you know, just for the record, you know, we are killing ourselves. It is rat poison. Putting all this food at the level that we're doing, it is absolute guaranteed certified check death. It is. It's just slower. That's all it is. But put that aside. It's the spiritual death. It's the emotional death. It's the financial death. It's the other part. And I sometimes think those are worse than to say, okay, listen, you know, I just had a horrible experience, nightmarish, and I took my abstinence a little too much for granted, had a bad experience, and I went off the deep end. I put 8,000 calories in 24 hours, which was ridiculous, felt horrible, and I'm back. You know, so I'm just doing round the clock. You know, but following what my sponsor says, his dude, just round the clock, you know, and I think moving forward for me to get to abstinence at this point, it has to be everything I do. This has to be, you know, I did it and I kind of fell a little bit back, didn't attend a meeting, maybe kind of slacked off. Maybe we take it just for granted. I took it for granted. And I cannot. The worst part about this story, over and above everything else I've said, is that, you know, I'm 53 years old. I've had surgery, and even though I'm in pretty decent shape, I'm sleepy. I'm sleepy a lot, and I think when I overeat, like, I could sleep 12 hours, 14 hours, 16 hours. I really got to a great place where I was exercising in a very healthy way, eating in a healthy way, and for the first time, I'm going to say in 3-4 years, like, I really didn't need that much sleep, and it's just this past relapse of 8,000 calories, 24, you can imagine what that does to your system. And I just, all of a sudden, I'm groggy, you know, today, I'm groggy yesterday, and I still feel it. It's brutal. And, you know, my heart goes out to everybody out there going through this. It's like a silent killer. It's, you know, when a big disease like polio comes around, we go, oh, we got to watch out for polio. We have to watch out for this. And it's amazing that how little focus of this on something that's just in plain sight, like me being a compulsive overeater, and I am. So that's it. I'm in Philadelphia, Eastern Standard Time. All are welcome to call or text. My direct phone number is area code 215.
We don't give phone numbers now. I'm sorry. Okay. We have a phone list. Yeah. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you for letting me share.
Janice.
Okay.
You got it. Thanks so much. Next up is Janice. Go ahead, Janice.
Hi, this is Janice Kay in Oregon. This is their paragraph. I'm in here in two words. These drinkers, that's me. The sufferer, that's me. Himself, his lethargy, his power of will. But for the most part, this is the paragraph about all my poor little codependents. This is about the people on page 18, first paragraph. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. And they make an appearance here. And it says, they sense that somehow my habits are abnormal. And I remember my poor little mommy when I was in high school standing around saying, oh, but I know you can lose 5 pounds. It's just 5 pounds. And I know you're strong enough to do this. Well, little did she realize that. No, I wasn't. I was up against something that I am not able to beat. It takes 12 steps and the hand of God to get me out of this thing. And I am so grateful to have those. But this is their paragraph. This is the people to whom I get to make amends and change my life. This is the paybacks, that long period of reconstruction that step 10 addresses. So this is their turn. And that's pretty much what I have to say. Thank you for listening. I pass.
Thanks, Janice. We have time for a one-minute share. Would anybody like to close us out?
Hi, this is Regina.
Hi.
I'd like to share. I am still, I guess what I'd like to say is that I'm still learning about the limits of this disorder, addiction, overeating, I mean, or whatever, it's a potato, doesn't matter what you call it, that I got to claim that I've got it. And it's a scary process to understand that, you know, I really got it. Like there's no escape from it for today, you know. But there is a relief that I can have, and I'm trying to get through the day, and I'm glad I jumped on this call just for that reminder, and I'm looking for a sponsor. So I'm going to hang on after the call to get some numbers. And I thank everyone who's a part of this journey. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Regina. That's fantastic. Yeah, anyone who wants to leave their name or get a name of a sponsor, stay after. Okay, so we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Justin B. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning. This is Justin B. from living in the state of Washington and in the state of recovery from compulsive overeating. This is A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.